You're recording, all right. Thank you and welcome everybody to the June 15th, 2020 Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board meeting. And I would like to announce that this is actually our official annual meeting also. So again, thank you for coming maybe twice, I guess, I don't know. But we will kick this off. Victoria, if you would be able to do roll call, please.
Yes. Dr. Byrne. Ms. Krager.
Here.
Ms. Frost.
Here.
Dr. James.
Here.
Mr. Logie. Dr. Nosley.
Here.
Ms. Solomon.
Here.
Dr. Thompson.
Here.
Dr. Wright.
Here.
You have quorum.
All right, thank you. So we do have quorum. So we will get right into the initial investigative review cases. We'll start off with 2258. Tracy, if you'd be able to read the summary for that.
Yes. Case 2258, the complainant is Laura Kelsey. Her respondent is Kenneth Holbrook, DVM. On June 17th, 2020, Buttons, a 7-year-old female Labrador retriever, was presented to respondent to be bred by surgical insemination. Complainant brought the dog and frozen semen tank to respondent. The dog was anesthetized and sent for surgery. The semen was thawed, was injected into each uterine horn, and the dog was recovered. When respondent was completing the paperwork after the procedure, he noted the wrong breed was documented on the forms. He notified the complainant immediately. When the complainant arrived to pick up the dog, she advised respondent that the wrong semen had been sent to her. Options were discussed. Complainant could let the dog deliver the litter, or the pregnancy could be terminated. On July 21st, 2020, the dog was presented to Applewood Animal Hospital to start treatment to terminate the dog's pregnancy. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board find ARS 3222.11, gross negligence, failure to ensure the correct semen was provided by checking the paperwork and semen vial prior to injecting the semen into the dog, which caused unnecessary suffering. The dog underwent a preventable surgical procedure and required follow-up care and treatment. ARS 3222.31, failure to maintain adequate medical records. Respondent documented the services provided under the wrong dog. And ARS 3222.31, as it relates to AAC R311 502L7, failure to document in the medical record the concentrations of atropine, torbitrol, and dextromethor that were administered to the dog. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
All right, thank you. And it looks like we have the complainant here, no respondent, but Mr. Stoll is monitoring.
Reading a statement too,
okay. So we will start with Ms. Kelsey, you're here?
Yes, I'm
here. Okay, if you'd like to approach, if to address the board, we can give you up to 5 minutes. I do want to remind you that we did review all the information you've already submitted, so you can just speak to us for 5 minutes.
Hello, and thank you again for hearing my complaint.
Before you start, if you can just introduce yourself.
My name is Laura Kelsey.
Thank you.
Hello, and thank you for hearing my complaint. I just wanted to recommend to the board that you find Dr. Halbach in violation of the Veterinary Practice Act due to his lack of professionalism and his outright disrespect for proper procedures. I went to Dr. Halbach because he's a reproductive specialist and felt that he had the experience to do correct procedures, correct paperwork. He showed gross negligence when he failed to confirm the correct semen was put into my dog, who's an AKC champion show-pointed Labrador retriever, which he clearly saw as we walked in the door. I had to take her to numerous clinics to rectify the situation and made several trips because of his incompetent procedure, and this resulted in the unnecessary suffering of my dog and possibly rendered her infertile.
Thank you. All right, you may step back, and we don't have any respondent here, but we have Mr. Stoll. If you'd like to come forward.
Yes, sir.
Read a statement.
David Stoll appearing on behalf of the respondent, Dr. Halbach. Dr. Halbach could not be here today, but asked that I read the statement on his behalf. With regard to the minor record-keeping omissions, Dr. Halbach wanted me to remind you that this incident took place almost 2 years ago. Since this incident in the summer of 2020, Dr. Hallback has completed a six-hour CE course on medical records keeping for veterinarians. Following the CE course, all of the medical records recommendations that were made in the six-hour course have been instituted at Bueno Pet Clinic. Unfortunately, this case predated the institution of those changes. As for the actual insemination procedure, you should know that Dr. Hallback has been involved in bovine and canine reproduction for approximately 50 years. He's a nationally recognized and internationally respected veterinarian in this area. In fact, Dr. Hallback is one of only a few veterinarians in Tucson who even practices in this area. He and his partner, Dr. Jean Nightingale, perform 90% of all reproductive veterinary procedures in Tucson. In all his years of practice in this area, Dr. Hallback has never had this situation that's presented here where the owner or supplier delivered the wrong frozen semen. Please remember that it was the complainant client who brought the frozen semen to the clinic, and Dr. Hallback was asked to inject the dog with the owner, with the semen that the owner brought, which is exactly what he did. We acknowledge that a mistake was made in this case where a dog was unfortunately inseminated with the wrong semen, but the mistake was made by the company that the owner hired to provide the semen. The company simply shipped the wrong semen, and the mistake was unfortunately not caught until was not caught by the owner before she brought it into Dr. Hallback. At the time of this incident, the first thing Dr. Hallback would do in one of these procedures was to review the enclosed paperwork when the semen is delivered to review the enclosed thawing instructions. That's important because the thawing instructions vary from procedure to procedure. In the past, the semen identity information was not inspected or reviewed by Dr. Hallback, as it had always been presented correctly, and this has never been a problem. It is Dr. Hallback's opinion that the standard of care for reproductive veterinarians is not to independently verify that the semen that the owner is delivering is correct. It is not, also not practical for a veterinarian practicing in this area to perform the verification during the procedure itself. This is a time-sensitive procedure. Once the incision is made for the insemination, the uterine horns are exposed. The incision is made before thawing the semen because once the semen is thawed, it must be immediately injected into the uterus in order for the procedure to be a success. During this brief period of time, which involves seconds, the frozen semen straw is removed from the tank, dipped into the thaw water, and the semen is loaded into the syringe to inject. In some, there is simply no time for the veterinarian to read the information which is attached to the tiny plastic semen straw. Also, there's a great deal of information on this little label. It's an extremely small type. And according to Dr. Hallback, he would need a magnifying glass to read that information during this time-sensitive procedure. The insemination procedure in this case was performed in a timely manner and was a success. Dr. Hallback did not discover that the owner had given him the wrong semen until after the breeding had been done, when he sat down to fill out the paperwork. When he discovered the fact that the wrong semen had been delivered to him, he immediately contacted the owner, who was upfront and forthright about what had happened. In light of the foregoing, we disagree with the investigative committee's suggestion that Dr. Hallback was grossly negligent, and propose that the board simply issue a letter of concern in connection with the owner's delivery of the wrong semen and the insemination procedure. Also, Dr. Hallback is willing to entertain a consent agreement with respect to the minor record-keeping violations. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, seeing as there are no additional witnesses, we will begin our discussion. And Dr. Nosley, you are lead on this, so we will have you take over.
Thank you. In reading through what happened in the events of this case, it's obvious that there was a major mistake made by the company supplying the semen. I mean, that's obvious to everybody. But I think under our purview, we need to separate that mistake and then look at the actions of the respondent that day. So there are two big problems with how he conducted that day. Events, he failed to read the paperwork in advance and failed to read the vial and the information on the vial. I think as veterinarians, it is very important to know exactly what you're injecting into a patient, regardless of the circumstances. The respondent actually stated at the investigative committee that there was no writing on the vial. And we just heard, and we can see that there indeed was writing on the vial and on the paperwork. Someone from the investigative committee made a very good point. If we separate out that this was a vial of semen and just to consider it as some other medication that is handed to a doctor to inject into an animal, you're going to double check and make sure that what you were putting in there is exactly what should be. I thought of an example, maybe a compounded medicine that an owner brought into a respondent and said, this is what this dog receives. And then to give that without looking at the label. There was also a problem with the entire record was written in the wrong patient's file. The respondent didn't even realize that until the investigative committee hearing. So I think there definitely were problems. It's basic understanding of what you're putting in an animal. You know exactly what it is, regardless of the circumstances that there was a very severe error by the supplying company. So that's kind of the way I looked at it. I would like to hear from the other members of the board what they think.
Mr. Chairman, just generally, as a non-veterinarian, I was a bit concerned about placing the responsibility on the owner who brought in the semen. It was my understanding from listening to the IC that the container came in sealed.
That's how it is.
Yeah. And that it was Dr. Hallback who opened the container and had access to the vial with the labeling.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
But
so
I thought I read something that said that the owner also had the paperwork that stated what read it was, because that was my concern too, is did she have access to it or was it all?
The paperwork was separate from the material in the vial. It wasn't sealed in the vial.
Okay, so she was able to see that and it was, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think there are multiple places this could have been caught, right? Like, certainly the doctor could have seen it. Certainly the owner could have seen it. Certainly the shipping company should have checked to make sure they were sending the right thing, right? Like, there are multiple places this could have been caught. I think the question really is do we feel like it's a standard of care for him to check that before doing it? And is the responsibility on him to catch it? I mean, I kind of related it to some of the cases we've done where the wrong leg was amputated, the right mislabeling of the x-ray. It's your job to make sure that that's done correctly. Like, I kind of looked at it like that. But then I was like, well, in those cases, the mistake is usually on your practice, not necessarily a third party. So that changes it a little bit. And while I think even Dr. Hallback would probably go back and say, obviously I would check these from now on. If you've been doing this for 50 years and you've never had the wrong one sent, I could see where you'd get a little lax and just go, this is what was brought into me, this is what I'm doing. Like, I could see where that would happen because it just doesn't happen, right?
Yeah, I mean, human medicine, obviously, you'd be triple checking if you were doing this for,
It still happens in human medicine.
But the thing I'm confused about is where does the responsibility lie with who obtained the third party for the semen? So, for example, we've had cases where there was confusion over crematorium status, right? From going from the veterinarian and then it changed, right? So the veterinarian contracted that crematorium, right? And that was collected, the fee was collected through the veterinarian, right, to make this service happen. And so it's like, okay, well, the veterinarian's responsible that this didn't change, or are they, right? That question comes up. In this situation, the veterinarian didn't contract the third party for the supply, And we all know that people don't always breed the same breed to that breed.
Right.
So if there was a question and he bred the straw and things were defrosted and this is a very narrow window and he stops what he's doing to go out and then now this straw isn't viable anymore and that was the intended breed to breed this other dog to, then what? So was that a discussion at the beginning is a question I have. Did they talk about what breed this semen was going to be and what the expectation was? Is that a normal conversation? Does a veterinarian get to decide, I'm only inseminating this breed to this breed? I think it's a question that I have at least that I want to know.
I think he knew because as soon as he looked at the paperwork, he realized it was wrong.
Okay, and right? That's the thing.
Like he looked at it and he immediately called the owner and was like, okay, we've got a problem here. Right. So I think he knew that that wasn't the intention. I just don't know where the blame really falls.
This is a client of his, he has other animals. Again, he wrote in the wrong record, so he's done work before. This is a purebred lab breeder, he knows that. I don't think that there would be this wild thing where we would go, well, we're gonna try a corgi this time. So.
I thought they sounded cute, but.
yeah, that would be. And what if this was a small breed dog and the semen was a giant breed dog? And this was done. You have to know what you're injecting into an animal. That's where it falls for me, and so I agree with the investigative committee. The other issue that kind of goes in general to what was going on is the owner specifically said to the respondent, there are 3 vials in there. So please, if you don't use them all, can I have what's left? And you check, and then it ended up, there was 1 vial. That's kind of a red flag right there. Well, there's supposed to be 3 vials. We just had that discussion a little while ago. Let's do some checking here.
Well, I guess I was confused too, because there's the artificial insemination report form. Like, where is that in the scheme of the big tank that comes? Because on there, it has the information of the semen, like what breed it came from, what was the stud. And then he has written on there what the post-thaw percentage vitality was. So it wasn't just that it was just on the vial that you couldn't read. Oh, there was a piece of paper.
It's on the paperwork,
yeah.
Also.
So, and he did look at that, because he wrote on there what he saw under the microscope.
That paper is his guide.
Yeah.
Here's what I'm doing today.
Yeah.
Because he has to know, I've done some of this work, and you have to know how to proceed with thawing and how that semen was processed. You have to know all these things, and that's, like you said, in the documentation. Mm-hmm. You follow a recipe, and at the top of that recipe was corgi.
So I think it's like most every medical issue we ever see here. It's never just one failure. There's multiple breakdowns in a chain, and that's where problems come in. But that's why you have that chain, so that you can kind of figure things out, and hopefully you catch it somewhere. So I think we definitely do have a lot of questions here. I don't think anybody has a motion on where we want to proceed from here, but everything I questioned was brought up out of my head, by the way, because that was almost exactly what I wanted to say. But I think we've talked about it a lot, so if anybody wants to make a motion on where we go from here, but I definitely have some more questions.
Well, I think in this case, I agree with the investigative committee's findings of violations, and I don't think there's any more information we can get from this, so I would recommend at this point a consent agreement and then discuss the details of that.
And this is for gross negligence, or?
Yes, this would be for gross negligence and the failure to maintain adequate records and documenting in the wrong and the wrong concentrations of the medications, because that was done in error. So pretty much what the investigative committee said. And to offer a consent agreement to remedy this would be where I would think we should go with this. And so, basically, with that, we start with accepting the.
Yes, I think You know, usually we, the next step would be to, you know, conduct the informal interview, but if you don't think that that's necessary in this case, you can certainly offer the consent agreement.
Yeah, that's what.
If not signed, invited, and then you would want to start by referring to the investigative report to see if you agree with their findings to adopt those, and then the conclusions of law. And then we can either bring it back, or we can actually talk about what you'd like to see in it.
We would want to do that, yeah, we do that.
Just proceed now with it. Does anyone have any feelings about handling it in this matter, or do we need to?
I think with negligence, honestly, you should probably go to letting the defendant, or the respondent lead their case with negligence. I just think it's a little bit of a higher standard.
Okay.
I also have a little bit of a question on the, let me go back to it real quick. Okay, that was the last one. The ARS 3222-21 as it relates to AACR 311-502L7.
Right.
Because it's failure to document the medical record of concentrations. When you look at 502L7, and this has come up before, it says concentration except when the medication is offered only in one size and strength.
Right.
Now, atropine is variable, but dexedomitor is pretty much only coming in one. Tor is pretty much only one standard one. I think there's some others you can get, so yeah. I don't know if you want to remove those potentially.
That makes perfect sense.
Just to be on the safe side there.
I was just going by the letter. And those drugs that come in only one concentration.
And that's always been my question in the past. Just because of how it's written, I'm like, it might be best to remove those two.
I would have no problem with that.
Okay.
No whatsoever. If we feel like we would like to hear from the respondent, I'm perfectly fine with that, and I can make a motion then to move this to informal.
But if we do it as a consent agreement the way it's written now,
mm-hmm.
and the veterinarian wants to speak, they can just decline the consent agreement, right? So it's not like they don't still have the ability if they feel like there's pertinent information, right?
If he wanted to come in, yeah.
I would assume so, because you can have it, if you don't accept it, it refers to a informal,
yeah.
I would assume.
I'm sorry, Dr.
Oh, if they didn't sign the consent agreement, it refers to an informal at that point?
You could. And I guess the question for the board members to think about is the information that you would obtain from the parties during an informal hearing going to help you determine what would be the appropriate disposition in this case? And if you don't think that, well, then perhaps the offering the consent agreement would be appropriate. If you don't feel comfortable without hearing from the licensee before doing that, then you want to go directly to an informal.
I think the, the failure to maintain adequate records and the drug one, I mean, I think those are fairly straightforward. It's kind of black and white there. The gross negligence with malpractice with that kind of level, I think there's a little more subjective level to it. So
mm-hmm.
I always just like to hear from them, give them that chance, especially just how legal proceedings play out. I think it's always better for those mm-hmm. harder things to have some.
I was proceeding with the written material and Mr. Stoll's. I think that was pretty.
Yeah, he's been very upfront and
he's
forthcoming
very,
and everything.
Yes. So, if we have the information, if we hear it directly from the respondent, if we need to, I have no problem with that. And I just like to know what I understand how Dr. Wright feels about it. But is there any other opinions as to whether we need to hear from the respondent in an informal?
I don't necessarily think there's anything else that I would get from the informal, but I'm still kind of on the fence on whether I think gross negligence is.
Okay, thank you for bringing that up, because I'm not a vet, but I don't know. I'm obviously defer to the experts on the board, but I'm also kind of struggling to truly get behind a gross negligence, but maybe.
Yeah. That's my only sticking point right now, personally.
So I was going to mm-hmm. ask, I was like, is there something,
I feel like there were multiple places this could have been caught. He's not the only one that didn't do the right thing. The dog certainly didn't die, unnecessary suffering. I mean, there was another procedure that had to happen, but at the end of the day, he did catch it. He was, it's not like this dog went full term. I mean, what if he had never caught it?
Right.
Like now I would be like, okay, now we have some other issues going on, but he caught it. He offered options. He did the right thing. He owned up to what was going on. Like, I guess I just go, I don't know if I, in relation to other cases we've seen with gross negligence, I don't know if I find that this is gross negligence.
It feels very administrative to me. Yeah. This feels very administrative. There's many checks and balances that could have happened along the way. And that's the thing I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's somewhere between.
He didn't make an error in the medical procedure.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he did that right. And he's done it a lot, and he's done it before for this particular client. And I have a really hard time with that.
It's not so black and white, and that's where.
What about a scenario where we inject something into a dog and an anesthetic agent, saying I made a mistake
Owner brought the anesthetic agent into you because you would do that?
Just reading a vial and making a tenfold error, or not reading the vial and you have the wrong pre-med. The wrong anesthetic. And
but you also wouldn't have a client hand you that vial and inject it in. You would.
I guess my point is, I don't see the difference if I'm going to put something in a dog.
But even if you read the vial, right, because it was semen, and you're like, okay, that's semen, and you go on with it.
A vial that says corny.
But the vial the thing is all the paperwork said it was semen and you couldn't see it. I mean, because I know a lot of veterinarians that can't read those vials that would have to have a magnifying glass, so they have to trust their team.
Reading glasses are very important for me.
Yeah, so I don't know. It'd make a lot of sense if he injected something completely different than semen to me. You know, like, oh, we inseminated your dog with not semen. I think it's a really, really far leap, again, because I think this is one of the incredibly rare things you'll see in veterinary medicine where the owner actually contracts somebody else to put something into their dog that a veterinarian would actually do. Because there's a lot of situations where I've seen owners bring medications in for their pet. Mm-hmm. The veterinarian looks at it and goes, nope, you can have that. I'm doing my medication.
Oh, sure.
And that's kind of where I'm mostly is. Breeding is about the one thing in veterinary medicine where the owner is hugely involved. So, like I said, there has to be kind of a spread of liability when we have that. If the veterinarian's ordering the semen themselves and getting everything from the distributor or the company directly shipped to them, which I think is the safest way,
yeah,
I won't accept
like
anything
it.
From a client, except for like Adequan or something where it's a specific vial that's already there. But any of those things, it's like I don't like having extra hands in the kitchen there. I mean, or extra cooks in the kitchen. So breeding is kind of different than a lot of other medications because it is something that is very, very involved with the owner directly. But we've had a lot of discussion here, and this is not necessarily the best time for the discussion, so I don't know if anybody has a motion to make at this point.
I mean, I could almost see professionally acceptable procedures for checking the paperwork prior to injection more than gross negligence.
Yeah.
Exactly how would that, what would that come under?
R311501?
Yes. That's correct.
So reducing it from gross negligence to
necessarily a reduction versus it's just a different, to me it has a different meaning to it, and I agree with the concept of it's fairly administrative. You're not the one that collected the semen, you're not the one that got the semen, you're the one that did it, and you should have checked the paperwork.
Right?
Like everything else was in, you should have checked the paperwork. You did everything else correctly.
Or you could have had a team member check the paperwork. But
yeah.
Again, it wasn't that difficult.
Yeah, so that's where I go back to maybe. Then it would be R311501.
Okay.
But you can still offer the consent agreement doing that one. Because I don't think there's anything else you're going to get out of moving it to an informal.
I don't know. So let's do that. I'll make a motion that we find a violation 32.22.32 under R311501. Which one is it?
511.
Okay.
Well, of course, you would say for the statute it would be ARS 32.22.32 number 12.
Number 12.
And then as it relates to 311501 number 1.
Okay.
And if you choose one of the options if it's professionally acceptable procedure for use of current professional and scientific knowledge.
It's a professionally acceptable procedure.
I would say professionally acceptable procedures for ensuring that what was delivered to you was what you were supposed to be injecting, right? And then the other two I would leave as is outside of taking out dextrobotulinum.
Yeah. The concentrations, yeah.
Is that dextrobotulinum and torbutrol that you wanted to remove?
And atropine.
Well, atropine is variable.
It's variable, but are we going to?
Oh, so you just want to take that whole?
I would take.
Just strike the whole thing?
I would strike that whole thing.
Thank you.
Okay, that motion done. I'll second that.
All right, so we have a motion and a second to find, or to offer consent agreement, I'm sorry. And do we accept the conclusions of law?
We haven't done that yet.
My understanding is the motion was for only one violation though. Did you want to also include record keeping in your motion? Or is it just limited to that?
I thought it was two, I thought it was also included 3222, 3221 for maintaining adequate medical records and making sure that it was under the appropriate dog. The only one we were getting rid of was 3222, 3221, which was the one that related to L7 for the concentrations. So you still have professionally acceptable procedures and the adequate medical records.
Okay, thank you.
As part of the consent agreement?
Yeah. So then we need to go forward and get for that.
So that's going to be.
Findings of fact.
Yeah, so that, well, let's, since we started with the conclusions of law, let's go forward with this motion for those violations. And then if we could have a second on that.
A second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second then for offering a consent agreement, finding those violations. We need to do a voice vote on that then, right?
You don't have to. I'm sorry. Did you say voice vote?
Yes, okay. I was like, yeah, we'll do it anyway. All right, Victoria, if you can do a roll call vote.
Okay. Ms. Krager?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Motion passes.
All right.
And then I would ask that we consider a second motion with respect to the findings of that. And then you can refer to the IR report. But if you want to deviate from that, you'll need to let us know.
The IR report?
The investigative report that was prepared by the committee.
Okay. So I would make a motion then to accept the findings of fact in this case.
Second. As written in the IR.
As written in the IR report.
Second.
All right, so we have a motion and a second to accept the findings of fact. We'll do another voice vote just on the safe side.
Voice vote or roll call?
A roll call vote, sorry. Oh, sorry, I got it backwards. Ah, that's where I messed you up.
Ms. Krager?
Aye.
Aye.
Dr. James?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Motion passes.
All right, so we have voted to offer a consent agreement in case 2258. I guess any questions can be directed to board staff?
Well, you still need to do the order as far as what the disciplinary.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's right. That's not getting pushed up next month. Oh, okay.
So if you'd like to hear the previous disciplinary.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Sure. So Dr. Hallbach had several disciplinary action in 2009. He was placed on probation for medical record keeping, and he was placed on probation for 1 year to do some continuing education, 4 hours at the emergency animal hospital, and then also other, and it was for not interpreting a dog's blood work correctly. In 2017, he was issued a letter of concern for lack of documentation in medical records for the amount of fluids not administered. In 2017, he was placed on probation as he was found in violation for ARS 3222-3212 as it relates to R-211-5011, failure to provide professionally acceptable procedures for not communicating with the pet owner the interpretation of blood work, and ARS 3222-32 number 12 as it relates violations to our code on 5011, failure to provide professionally acceptable procedures, and use of current professional scientific knowledge for using outdated anesthetic protocol of atropine and azithromycin, followed by mask induction when other viable options were available to avoid undue stress on a patient who's placed on probation for 1 year to do 8 hours of continuing education, 4 in anesthesia and 4 in client communications, and a $500 civil penalty. And in 2021, Dr. Hallbach was placed on probation for ARS 32-22-31-32, number 21, as it relates to R311-502L4 for failure to record the results of exams, and also for failure to document blood work and radiographs in the medical record. He was placed on probation for 1 year for 8 hours of continuing education and medical record keeping. And this also resulted in a letter of concern for failure to refer.
Quite the history there.
Yes, pretty extensive.
Yeah. And it's consistently a medical records issue, and medical records CE does not seem to be addressing the issue, although we did hear in the statement that things have changed since then, and this was before that, but we have a repetitive pattern that medical records, that's a lot why we said this was kind of administrative.
Right.
If you don't have good medical records and you're not used to checking your own medical records, why would you check somebody else's paperwork that comes in, right? Like, the theme is all this administrative stuff that he doesn't like to deal with, and I don't know how you get through to somebody like that.
There was some misinterpretation of lab results in there, too. That isn't records.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there were a few other things in his history, but a lot of it seems to be around...
Most of it.
Yeah.
Medical records.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and... the one thing that gets people most often is punitive damages with monetary.
Exactly.
You can get $1,000 per violation up to $5,000 total. Maybe it's time just to hit.
That's my thinking.
Yep.
That's kind of his.
Something will send a message.
Yes. Yeah, there's nothing more continuing education.
No.
Right.
I think we still need to do
something. Paying attention during it.
We'll still put some continuing education on there because I think the more education, the better. But at this time, it's monetary. That's the only way it's going to try and send a signal through.
With that in mind, I think that... A civil penalty for the records violation is definitely in order. And I would like to also then discuss a civil penalty. The complainant, she asked for a reimbursement. She claims that it cost her $10,000 to remedy this situation. I don't think she would be entitled to something like that, maybe in a court of law where they're doing punitive damages. But once the dog left the respondent's care, he had no say in what was done with the dog. She could have done any number of things with the dog. And so awarding those fees, I don't think is appropriate. However, she never paid the bill for the surgery, which amounted to $1,117, something like that. If she had, I would be considering that she should be reimbursed for that, but she didn't pay it. So I would therefore look at a civil penalty of $1,000.
Yeah, and I think that's the important thing is by statute we're only allowed to refund or authorize a refund of money. We cannot apply any kind of judgment money.
Right,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, so,
exactly.
And that's just by statute. Yeah, it's not a decision. It's like we're not even allowed. That's a court of law thing.
That's a court of law
thing,
right. So I think hearing the priors, I think that a civil penalty of $1,000 for the records violation and then a civil penalty of $1,000 for the, what do we call it again, Dr. James?
Professionally acceptable procedures.
Professional acceptable procedures.
Second.
And then do we want to do any continuing education with that? Or? I mean, I know we've done it before, but I always think it more is better.
And he's done it.
I was going to say, Mr. Stoll just said that he
did 6 hours.
Oh, true, yeah. Well,
so,
supposedly.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, from 2021.
Multitasking, something else.
It sort of becomes punitive and not correcting anything.
Dr. Wright, members of the board, one of the things that you can do is if you would normally have ordered continuing education, you can do that, but allow him to submit what he's already taken since the complaint's been filed in satisfaction of whatever you think it would be appropriate.
Okay.
And that way you're at least memorializing if there is a future event that you did order additional continuing education in a particular area.
Or you could do like the 8 hours continuing education and use that also for the renewal cycle? Or would that be a bad road?
Well, you usually don't.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah.
So I don't know that you'd want to deviate from that, but in the past you have allowed them to submit what they've already done since the complaint was filed.
Okay.
Then the question comes up, can he use those hours for his license renewal?
Typically, no.
He can't if we order that as part of it.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's, I like that. I think that's appropriate.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question of staff. Were those 6 hours of medical record CE part of the 2021 violation cure?
I'm not positive, but I assume that they were.
Okay, so you're counting them twice.
Well, what we could do though is make sure that we could include language in the consent agreement that we would not be able to do just that, Jane.
Okay.
That if they were used in satisfaction of a prior order, that they could not be used in satisfaction of this requirement.
Thank you.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. So not these hours right here, but if he did other hours
right,
too.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay. So I was like, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. Now I get it.
And while the CE doesn't seem to be impacting him, I do think it's important to have it in there so that we see it if this comes up again.
I agree. So should we do that as a separate motion?
I'm sorry, I was giving additional information on his CE.
For the CE, a motion to accept his CE.
Except my understanding now through Tracy, maybe she can elaborate more, is that he did use that in satisfaction of a prior board order.
Right. So we can't count twice.
She did share with me, though, that he took it after this particular
incident.
Well, that's what Mr. Stoll had
maybe
stated
in
his statement. Do we want to do
more?
That
was in the statement. So do we want to add more?
Is there...
I think there's never enough CE. I don't think 20 hours every 2 years is enough in general, so...
Another possible option, Mr. Chairman, is a practice monitor briefly to review his records.
Because of the repeated...
Right, and to see if they've been remedied or not.
And this is in Tucson, correct?
Yes.
So practice monitors can be a little difficult outside of the Phoenix area sometimes.
And then the only thing I add to that is that then it ends up being work because it comes back to the board again where we have to review it as an item.
Yeah.
And so I struggle with that. I
don't
know what you're saying.
Yes, I
know.
I don't disagree
like,
with you at all.
But then when it's more work for every, you know, an additional work for staff.
And I just know it gets difficult with traveling right now with people, and monitors can be a little bit more difficult in certain areas. So.
I would probably just do our normal motion of finding the violation and that we want him to do CE, and I would probably say 6 hours, 8 hours, somewhere in of medical records. That is documented. I agree with, you can't do too much of it, and maybe at some point it sinks in.
Well, you get a different, you do a different one.
I was gonna say, as long as it's not the exact same.
The practice monitor wouldn't have prevented this situation anyways.
No,
he did catch it. It wasn't, it wasn't like it wasn't caught and somebody could have caught it. So, to me, continuing education is never a bad path to go down.
No, that was mainly for the continuing
medical
records.
But again, the other violations that show a pattern were after this particular situation. So it's not like this is a new problem that kind of came up after the CE.
And hopefully a civil penalty, a stringent one, is going to finally send a message of stop or start, I guess. Start reading.
Well, again, this is a older, this is an older case too, though, so you see that, you know, it just, continuing education seems like a fair, you know, again, you can pick up something new.
Yeah.
Well, we should probably, we've had a lot of discussions, so we should probably start going forward, yeah.
Make a motion for, offer a consent agreement, and that to include a year of probation and continuing education of 6 hours in medical record keeping. A civil penalty of $1,000 for the failure to use acceptable practice standards, and a civil penalty of $1,000 for the records violations. Did I, is that okay?
Second.
All right, so we have a motion and a second.
Can we, I'm sorry, Dr. Wright, members of the board, is it okay if we add to that motion, and if not signed, invite him forward?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, so amended. All right, so we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? And if we can do a roll call vote, then it's the right phrase.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Passes.
All right, so the motion passes, and board staff will take care of that.